everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board, where politics and sports intersect, and I bring it all to you. So welcome back, and we are going to do a deep dive today into the heart of the Pittsburgh Steelers football team, specifically Mike Tomlin. On an off note, that was the very first team I saw play. It was Super Bowl X, I believe. And they were playing the Dallas Cowboys. Little did I know it was the Cowboys who were the underdog. But the room I was in, everybody was rooting for the Cowboys. And I felt bad for the Steelers, who were composed of Franco Harris, Terry Bradshaw, Rocky Blyer, Lynn Swann, John Stallworth, Jack Ham, Mean Joe Green. They were my team. And I love that team. And I've always had a soft spot for them. And we're going to talk about Mike Tomlin. And even though I believe the team has stated he is coming back, is it really the best move? Or is it time for an amicable divorce and for Mike Tomlin to move on to greener pastures? There's not been a playoff win since 2016 for the franchise. So we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to talk about tribalism, racism. You know, I got into the political battle because I got tired as a conservative of everybody looking at conservatives as being racist, and that was the farthest from the truth. It was actually, it's an utter and complete lie. I have found more racism amongst Democrats. It's a superiority complex. They feel they have to be able to help we minorities out. Technically, I'm a Latino. You wouldn't recognize it, but my grandmother, as I've said many times, was called the N-word. She looks like an Afro-Caribbean. My family runs the gamut of white to black, rich to poor, straight to gay, everything in between. So I take tribalism seriously. I grew up with a military background. So having friends, family, close acquaintances, plain acquaintances, close friends, ranging from black to white. So this tribalism just really irks me. And that's why I got politically involved. Until we end this tribalism, this country will not grow. And in fact, other countries are passing us. And the last, 15, 20 years, 30 years, I've seen the shift of victim mentality and excuse making for Latino racism, black racism, Asian racism, women with the Me Too, everything, you know. And that doesn't make us stronger as a nation. That doesn't bring us together. And lo and behold, it never fails. Every offseason or in the football season, there's always somebody trying to play the race card with the head coaching gig. We're going to talk about that, about an agent named Damian Butler, I believe is the name, or Eugene Butler. He's a moron, is what he is. And there was a time where I knew literally every agent in the NFL. We had relationships with 70 to 80% of them. Because of the previous business I owned. And then we're going to close it out with Jason Kelce and his show, as well as who the hell is Kylie Kelce, you know? I tell you, man, there's some great marketing going on, and we're going to talk about the dismal ratings with the show that nobody likes. Look, let's be honest. The Kelces are at an uber high because of Taylor Swift. You know, they were well known within the circle, sports circles, football circles, that is, not sports, but just the football circle. And with the Taylor, with Mrs. Taylor Swift, Jason Kelce, hold on, which Kelce is it? Travis Kelce, oh my God. With Mrs. Taylor Swift, aka Travis Kelce, everybody now knows who the Kelces are. It's just oversaturation for a mediocre product. And we're going to talk about that. Do not forget, you can find this podcast at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as our social media outlets, such as Apple. Actually, these aren't social media outlets. These are podcast outlets, such as Apple, Spotify, y Pandora, as well as Rumble and YouTube, all under the handle Grumblings Media. So let's get down to this. Is it time for Mike Tomlin to move on, regardless of the team stating he's coming back? I think it may be. And that's what I want to talk to you guys about. There he is there. It's a snazzy shot there. So we're going to tackle the question that's been on the minds of fans, analysts, and even the team's leadership. Is it time for Mike Tomlin to move on? Now, a lot of this information I got from a great writer. His name is Jerry Dulac. Let me show you a picture of Jerry. He's an old Steelers beat writer, and they are a dying breed. There's Ed Bochette and Jerry Dulac on the left. Jerry Dulac, this man knows his stuff. If you really want to get into sports and understand each team and be an analyst, make sure you follow, make sure you follow the beat reporters. The beat reporters know the heart and soul. There's too many insiders that, whether it's Rappaport, the guy at ESPN, Adam, I can't remember his name. I always forget his name. What's his name? All these insiders, they really have great relationships with the local beat reporters because they're the ones on the know. When my previous company was seen as one of the top NFL information sites in the country, and I had a relationship with we had beat reporters in every NFL locker room feeding us detailed information. So I got a lot of this information here from Jerry Dulac. And you know what? Let me grab Jerry's handle, Twitter or his X handle. He's a must follow if you're a Steelers fan. And there you have it. That's where you can find him. That there at the bottom right here, Jerry Dulac. I got a lot of my information from him. I follow him and I follow him intently. He's a must follow. Good information on the Steelers. So everything I'm going to talk about. A lot of the information, if not most of it, was derived from his articles, his posts, and some interesting data he actually puts out there. So let's get down to it here. Let me get my notes back up here so I know what I'm talking about. Okay. So he critiques the Steelers' offense as being conservative, offensive strategy, especially in critical game situation. As an analyst for many years, I immediately see that with the Steelers and their play calling. Arthur Smith, it's kind of bland. For their offense to work, you really have to have a power running game. And if I'm correct, their top rusher is 3.9 yards per carry. They need a Derrick Henry to really make that offense really move. Why they didn't go after him in free agency is beyond me, but they should have. So under Tomlin, the team's play calling has been seen as lacking aggression, I can tell you that. And that's been a point of contention. So it really doesn't matter. And I think Tomlin's gone through 3 or 4 offensive coordinators the last 6, 7 years. And it just hasn't worked out. And you don't have to have creativity, but the Steelers seem to thrive on predictability and a lack of playmakers on a consistent basis. Excuse me. If you have a team built on a power rushing attack and you need that power rushing attack to open up the play action pass with deep throws, then you need somebody like a Derrick Henry, a pound it guy, you know, or a Bijan Robinson, you know, somebody who can pound the rock, set up that play action pass. And if you don't, your play action is not going to really be effective. And the truth is, the Steelers' offense has not been an offense that is powerful enough to the point that their rushing attack can also grind defenses down. Tomlin's handling the players such as George Pickens in the past, Antonio Brown, Santonio Holmes. He has a tough disciplinarian style, but the problem is some of these receivers are superstars. Pickens, I think he's really a borderline number one, to be quite frank. So they also lack some playmakers, but his management style towards some of these players has not really improved with the times. And I don't know what the answer is because I kind of agree with how he's treated some of these players, but you got to be able to replace him. And he has not been able to replace him. They also had the running back. I can't remember his name. Him and Santonio went to the Jets. Yes. Le'Veon Bell. So he's lost some great star power, and I don't think they've really replaced him. I mean, they can have a successful year, but today's 1,000-yard rusher in 17 games in an 18-week season, yeah, it's not like when it was during the days of Franco. You had 12 games and then 14 games to get that 1,000 yards. Much, much different. So there's an ongoing debate on whether his methods adequately address the behavioral issues among some of the high-profile players. But eventually, no matter how good a leader you are, your message can wear thin. And it wears thin even more quickly when you don't win, and they haven't won a playoff game since 2016. So let's talk about the lack of this playoff success. Again, they haven't secured a playoff victory since 2016, and that's a fact. Jerry Dulac often highlights to critique Tomlin's postseason record. I mean, it's what you call an ugly truth. It's a consistent failure to advance. I mean, making the playoffs is one thing, but you're one and done for years. It's like, come on. And it's become a recurring theme in his analysis. Now, I look at it two ways. The guy can't get past the hump with his own regime and with his own players now that the Bill Cowher's era is completely over. By being completely over, I mean there's no more Bill Cowher players. There's no more front office people that were there when Bill Cowher was there. And that's when I said Tomlin's real test was going to be was when it was his own front office, his own regime of players, et cetera, et cetera. And he hasn't done much. His last Super Bowl was with Cowher's players. This playoff defeat was their sixth straight loss. So they're like one and done six straight times. And it was the eighth time the Steelers have lost in the opening round. Again, I stated his test will come once the Bill Cowher regime has left and he's failing. But in his defense, he does not have a losing season. And what, no matter how great that stat is, it's also a misleading stat in two ways. One way is 9-7. Yeah, okay, great. You don't have a losing season, but you're stuck in the middle of the pack of the NFL draft, and you don't have access to these high-end players. That's what happens with mediocrity. And two, the Steelers don't have a history of a willingness to go out in free agency to pay the big money. So in essence, you kind of can look at it as Tomlin has maximized his players, but you still got to get over the hump. If he was a head coach for like the Cowboys and they had a better salary cap situation than they do, I mean, he'd probably have a couple of deep playoff runs, if not a Super Bowl by now, since 2016. So that's why I bring up the question, is it time for him to move on? Has he maximized, you know, again, his message? It wears thin. And if you don't win, it wears even thinner. You're like, dear God, how many times are you going to say that? Oh, dear God, same old, same old. But when you have the rings to back it up, it has extra emphasis. Pat O'Reilly in the NBA is able to do that. Tom Brady could do that. You know, Wayne Gretzky in hockey could do that. So when you have the championships to back it up, and if I remember correct, Parcells said that once, kind of whipped out his rings. I have these, and that's what backs up what I can say. Then there's skepticism around his decisions at quarterback. I don't know if it's that as much as they're cheap. They don't want to pay. You know, they don't want to pay the quarterback. I mean, they got Justin Fields. You have to develop Justin Fields. And Tomlin hasn't showed the capacity to be able to develop a quarterback. Then you got Russell Wilson, the older guy. He's still gelling. But when you don't have that strong rushing attack, you can't expect him to be successful with the play action. So Dulac also notes a conservative history with quarterback rotations that doesn't utilize their full potential. And the kicker, again, I keep talking about Cowher's players. He inherited Ben Roethlisberger, but he struggled to get his own quarterback and stamp the Steelers with his guy since Roethlisberger retired. So here's an ugly, more ugly truth. There's a pattern where the Steelers struggle to improve or adapt as the season progresses. So what happens is the NFL is a game of attrition. Players lose weight as the season goes along. They get injured. And when you're maximizing mediocrity, as that team is at times, well, slow starts are compounded by an inability to elevate the performance during the second half, the latter half of the season. And that leads to disappointing finishes or even playoff misses. This past season was the fourth time in 6 years the Steelers have lost three consecutive games in December. It was the fifth time in the past 7 seasons they've lost three consecutive games after Thanksgiving. So this team has a problem. a big problem. That's not coincidence. There's something amiss here. What Dulac states is that the team fails to step up in crucial December games. Maybe it's the weather. I say that jokingly because they're a cold weather city. You think that would be an advantage to them? Yeah. But regardless, they were this year controlling their own destiny to win the North Division and even compete against the Chiefs for that number one slot, and they fell apart. And they ended up being a wild card and being one and done again. Now, Tomlin, not much, but he has had some in-game decision issues and strategic adjustments. Maybe that's been part of the half, part of the problem for their second half swoons. So, again, the Steelers do have a competitive record, but there's not, because of these second half swoons or the seasons and the one and dones, it's like there's no significant improvement. They're just mired in mediocrity. They struggle to capitalize on leads or the mount comebacks. You know, when they're behind by 10 points, I'm like, put a fork in them. They just don't seem to have that ability. So there's frustration among fans, the media, amongst everybody. I'm sure Tomlin himself. Does Tomlin want to leave? I'd say nah. His wife's well in with her own business there. I'm speculating here, but I'm sure Tomlin may have a potential business interest in the city as well. So sometimes it's tough to want to move on, but they're not winning. No playoff victory since 2016. He won a Super Bowl with Bill Cowher's players. There's no denying he's an above average head coach, though. So what are some of the arguments for moving on? Lack of playoff success. This is an extended playoff drought. Second half season struggles. Already noted how this isn't like one or two seasons. It goes back five seasons. What did I say? Seven seasons in one of them? Let's see. Where's my notes? Fifth time in the past seven seasons. They lost three consecutive games. Fourth time in the past 6 years. Yeah. You know, so this isn't something that's just about the last few years. And then there's the quarterback and offensive management. They are bland, vanilla bland offensively. They're predictable, and they don't have their strong pounded out. They need actually a Derrick Henry and a game manager at quarterback. And Russell Wilson would be great for that. Not Justin Fields. Justin Fields is not that type of quarterback. But Russell Wilson, at his age, his ability, a couple Super Bowls, he's a potential Hall of Fame player, if not already a lock to get in the Hall of Fame. So these are some of the reasons people talk about for him to move on. So what about staying? He's going to stay, but the team is consistent. And at the end of the day, the Steelers are making a profit as a business. So there's that. He is seen as a leader, a man amongst young men. There's always a chance they can rebound. And loyalty. The Steelers have a tradition of coaching longevity, and Tomlin's potential Hall of Fame status kind of cements and locks him in. So despite the playoff shortcomings, the fact that he hasn't had a losing season really is what is the key to his staying power right now. You know, on social media and online, on the internet, and sports analysis show, it's divided. Most of them, actually, it's not divided. Amongst the fans, they talk about it, but amongst analysts and TV shows, what I'm talking about is in the minority, but now you're hearing whispers more and more because this was a defining season in terms of tipping the scale and, when's the last time Tomlin won anything? Type questions. There's no public indication that the Steelers are going to move on or have even contemplated that. So this is merely me speculating on it. This is a very complex discussion, to be quite honest. There's a lot of pros and cons. I think part of it is the Steelers themselves. I think he could do better at another franchise. Sometimes you just need that divorce to move forward. Like I said, imagine him with the Cowboys or the 49ers. And not that these teams are the Cowboys are replacing their head coach. But what I'm saying is a team that has a history of willing to spend to keep and bring quality players in. And he could have a couple championships under his belt. Again, he's coming back. And whether you're in the camp that believes a change could reinvigorate the franchise, or if you want the stability Tomlin brings, it's clear that between Tomlin's mediocrity, the Steelers not willing to pay, I don't see change happening. And that's why I advocate for an amicable divorce. Again, I'll close it out with this. If Tomlin resigned or was let go today, he'd have 31 teams going, hey, Tomlin's on the market, you know, and the teams that need a head coach, they'd be calling. Let's bring him in and talk to him. All right. So let us move to what I call the misleading nature of racially charged posts on X, formerly Twitter, on NFL coaching tenure. So what do I mean by this? Well, let me show you. This is terrible. So this is Damian S. Butler. He's an agent. I don't know if he's a bigot or just stupid to post this. Notice a pattern. Antonio Pierce fired after one season. Gerard Mayo fired after one season. Lovie Smith fired after one season. David Cooley fired after one season. Steve Wilks fired after one season. Rand Carthon, GM, fired after two seasons. We're not going to talk about Rand Carthon or GMs, but real quick on Rand Carthon. Look, here's the problem with Rand Carthon. He had 2 years. You know, people said he drafted pretty well. I don't see it. But it doesn't matter. Your future is always tied to your quarterback. And he struggled with the quarterback. Will Levis, you know, and then prior to that, Malik Willis. It's like, I don't know if he drafted Malik Willis. I'm not sure. But regardless, neither one of those players seemed to be NFL starting material. We know Malik is not. He did well as a backup coming off the bench for the Green Bay Packers. But that's a much better franchise, much better coached, much better ran. And, oh, Rand Carthon's the one running the Titans. So it speaks volumes when a player has a team around him and doesn't try too hard. I mean, in Tennessee, he had visions of being the starter, Malik Willis did. And he just, there's a saying, you're trying too hard. Just relax. And he seems to have gone through that maturity a bit in Green Bay and relaxed. He was always trying to do more than he was capable of. But going back to Damian S. Butler, you would think, wow, black. Oh, man, there's some racism there. And let me show you who this idiot is. That is Damian Butler, idiot extraordinaire. Is he a racist or a bigot? If you look at that and you, once I finish talking, you're going to go, yeah, he is. I don't know if he is or not, but I do know this, that tribalism is what keeps this country torn apart. You know, we hear the media, it's about the victimhood of first blacks, then Asians, now Latinos with Latinx. They emasculated the white guy back in the 70s and 80s. Then they began emasculating the black man. And now, in fact, that goes back to the 60s with the government telling the black woman, you don't need a man, we your husband. Hey, dole out those checks, keep you in the projects. We don't care about your education, because that's what's happened. That's what the Democrats have done to black Americans. Now they shifted over to want to do the Latinos with Latinx. There's no Latino that accepts Latinx. Anyway, you know, I'm not sure, but I think he works at QC Sports. It's a talent agency, and they do baseball and football. But at the end of the day, the guy's a bigot. The guy is a bigot. And here is why. Let me show you a list here that I put together. So I had to dig this out. I actually just really quick, you know, cut and pasted it on here. It's a list that I made for this segment. So black coaches fired after 1 year. These are the recent ones. Gerard Mayo, Antonio Pierce, Lovie Smith, David Cooley, and Steve Wilks. And in his post, he kind of made it seem as if, notice a pattern here, is what he said. You know, when he pointed out, you know, David Cooley, Steve Wilks, Levy Smith, Antonio Pierce, and Gerard Mayo, 2024, 2021, 2018. But look at the white coaches fired. Frank Wright, 2023, Nathaniel Hackett, 2022, Urban Meyer, 2021, Freddie Kitchens. I mean, Jim, some of these I had completely forgotten about. Freddie Kitchens. I'm like, oh, man, I'm trying to remember who Freddie was. Jim Tomsula, you know, Chip Kelly. You know, now Rob Chudzinski, I thought, should not have been fired. So let me also say this. I believe unless you lose the locker room, you should give, or unless sometimes, having worked in the industry, sometimes you discover things behind the scenes that the public isn't aware of. Sometimes there's things behind the scenes that we're not aware of. But unless they really lose that locker room, you got to give a coach a chance to build his program out. So I am in generally speaking, against the firing of head coaches after the first year. But in Gerard Mayo's case, he deserved to be fired. He should not have been hired. In Antonio Pierce's case, he should not have been hired. The man did not have a quarterback. Gerard Mayo, reports are he lost the locker room. There are things that he alienated players and coaches. So there was a lot of problems there with Gerard Mayo. But Antonio Pierce should not have been fired. I mean, so out of those five black coaches, there's what? Pierce, Mayo, Smith, Cooley, and Wilkes. So all four of them are here. Now, let's be honest here. There's more white coaches hired than black coaches. That's so, anthropologically speaking, that's normal. I mean, look at BET. More black people hired than white people. It tends to be a culture thing, and they're trying to change it for the better. But this Damien S. Butler just wants to play the race game. Again, Frank Reich is seen as a brilliant QB developer. I'm not sure if he is, but he was prematurely fired from the Panthers. Now, Nathaniel Hackett should have been fired. Urban Meyer, I'm like, okay, you're an idiot, but I would not have fired him. Kitchens, Tomsula, I don't even remember them. Chip Kelly, I thought, should not have been fired. The problem with Kelly was the lack of buy-in from his players. So maybe he should have been. Maybe he lost the locker room. Chudzinski should not have been fired. I was never a Mularkey fan. You know, Cam Cameron was never, in fact, I think, I'm trying to think if he's still alive. But Cam Cameron, you know, he was never a great fit. I think he lost the locker room. Jim Mora Jr. was always an overrated head coach, but he should have been given another chance. Then I went back all the way to 2000, Al Groh. And then Marty Schottenheimer, who was a perennial winner. And then Pete Carroll, fired from the Jets. Finished 6-10, goes on to win a Super Bowl with the Seattle Seahawks and take the team to two Super Bowls. So this guy, like I said, he's either a racist / bigot or just too stupid, or being polite, he's ignorant and not realizing what he said is very racist and bigoted. So let's dig a little deeper. Mike Tomlin, head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers since 2007. 17 seasons with the Steelers as of 2023. So this was the 18th season he just completed. The longest tenured active coach post-Belichick. And let's talk about this. Let me bring this back up here. Let me bring this image, because this is really interesting here. He goes, notice the pattern. Antonio Pierce, Rod Mayo. So let's stick with Lovie Smith and David Cooley. David Cooley was fired after the 2021 season with the Houston Texans with a 4-13 record. Lovie Smith, a black head coach who he lists there, was hired to replace him in 2022. And then he was fired after a 3-13-1 season. And his replacement is currently D'Amico Ryans, who is also black and hired in 2023. So you see what I'm saying with the bigotry here? Look, people, we've got to end this tribalism. We have stamped out white racism literally over 90% of it. It's stamped out. I mean, there's always going to be racists, but it's been stamped out so much that there have been over 400 race hoaxes since like 2012, meaning people have made stuff up saying, look at these white races, look at these white races, since 2012, over 400. If racism was so prevalent as Damien S. Butler wants to imply, why are you making up race hoaxes? Why are you making up a tweet, an ex-post like this that's an obvious lie? Are there ulterior motives at hand? Hey, I'd love to bring them on the show. Are there black issues we need to deal with? Yeah. But you go to a trailer park and see how many poor working whites there are. Or you go to a barrio, see how many poor Latinos. So again, David Cooley was fired, replaced by Levy Smith, who is black. Fired, replaced by D'Amico Ryans, who is black. So the impact of a post like this, well, they stoke the fires of racism. They reinforce negative stereotypes. And they gain traction because there's a lot of hate to go around. We've been brought up the last couple generations in a victimhood mentality. It's easy to go, well, I didn't get the job because I'm Latino or black or Asian or now white. It's easier to be the victim. And this distracts from the real issues. The real issue is education. Let's go beyond football. I remember 20 years ago, and I'm sure the stats haven't changed much, reading the stats. In fact, we did a show on my conservative podcast, Fired Up, and I brought the stats of minorities. It's less than a 50% graduation rate, and they're at an eighth grade level approximately. So he's suggesting that race is a primary dismissal factor, and he's overlooking performance and management. So let's go to the performance again. Gerard Mayo lost the locker room. There were things he alienated head coaches. There were things the crafts did not know about him prior to hiring him. He ended up 4-13. The defense worsened under him. And that's supposed to be his specialty. And it was pretty much the same defense from the Belichick era or previous year. 4-13. Antonio Pierce, 4-13. Again, that one really bugs me. You need a quarterback in this league. And where Gerard Mayo has Drake May to work with, Antonio Pierce has two backups. And Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. Lovie Smith, 3-13-1. You know, Lovie Smith had a great run with the Bears, but because of the racial issues, he was kept about three seasons too long. You know, and then when he got to the Texans, wasn't able to produce with them. So I wasn't, that firing did not do much for me in the sense, oh, he was giving a bum deal. But again, my general belief is you give him more than one season. David Cooley, I kind of felt bad for him. He went in there knowing he was going to be a placeholder of sorts, and that's kind of what he was. And then Steve Wilks, I've never been impressed with Steve Wilks. You know, in fact, he went to the 49ers last year and did a dismal job and got let go as defensive coordinator. From what I understand, nice guy. I just have not been impressed with him. I mean, Frank Reich is impressive. Nathaniel Hackett's a bum. Urban Meyer turned out to be a bum. Kitchens and Tomsula, I don't even remember them again. Chip Kelly was an innovative, creative genius. I don't think he just knew how to handle NFL players. Rob Chudzinski, I think, was giving him a bum deal. Malarkey, I thought, was overrated. Cam Cameron, out of his depth. Jim Mora Jr., overrated. Al Groh, it was so long ago, I don't even remember. In fact, I think he may no longer be with us. I'm not sure. Marty Schottenheimer's another one who I think was always he was just too conservative in the playoffs. You know, obviously Pete Carroll, you know. So I think Damian S. Butler was just fostering hate, spreading misinformation that does nothing but create greater racial divides when we need to be doing everything to come together. You know, again, I grew up with white, black, within my family, with my friendships, my 32 beat reporters. There were always a handful that were black. My writers, we always had a mixture. I just wanted qualified people. And the pushback was swift on X. He was embarrassed. I'm surprised that tweet is up. But then again, he's trying to probably make it. Hey, the race game, the racism game, that industry is worth a couple $1 billion a year. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and you know, Martin Luther King with Jesse Jackson, you know, he's rolling his grave at what Jesse Jackson became. So the motivation appears to be provocation or pushing a biased narrative. Again, only widens racial gaps. So posts like this, they do not contribute anything, but rather fuel more division. And I think that's what he wants. Division and hatred by presenting a skewed false narrative. The focus on race over merit and context is harmful and counterproductive, serving no constructive purpose but to divide and incite. Damian S. Butler's probably proud of himself, in my opinion. for doing what he did. He wanted to get his little points in, but probably was not expecting a backlash. We're in a different era. We're in an era now where we're going from victimhood to, like, enough. Let's get back to meritocracy. And there you have it. Let's move on. Kelsey's late night fumble. Ratings disaster for Jason's ESPN show. Let's take a look at it this year. That's his set there, I guess. That's his wife, Kylie, there in the bottom two spots here. And that's him on the set. So first of all, let's talk about the Kelsey family. They've been thrust into the spotlight in unprecedented ways, and not just for their athletic prowess on the field, but due to their connections with one of the world's biggest pop stars, Taylor Swift. Again, as I said earlier in the show, in the opening, they're well known inside of football circles with the hardcore fans. The average fan prior to Taylor Swift entering the fray had no clue who the Kelsey brothers were outside of Travis Kelsey being a phenomenal tight end. Most people don't know offensive linemen, defensive linemen, linebackers, things like that. Nobody really knew who Jason Kelsey was. He kind of rode the coattails of his brother Travis, and they created this podcast, which has done very well. These are the type of podcasts or ventures they do well while the players are in the limelight, meaning Travis Kelsey is playing. And now, and once players like this tend to leave the spotlight, their shows die, or their followings die. You know, it's funny. Some players will have 200,000 followers, but then you'll see their engagement a couple years after they retire is minimal because nobody cares anymore. And just on X, people just forget to unfollow. Again, you have the Taylor Swift effect on the Kelsey name. It's led to various media ventures, including Jason Kelsey's late night talk show and Kylie Kelsey's podcast. However, as their presence in the public eye grows, so does the scrutiny and obviously the fatigue. I'm tired of them and I don't even really deal with them. And that's coming from the audience, the people they're trying to woo to watch your show, to buy their product. And look, Taylor Swift is an idiot. And unquote, fuck the patriarchy, unquote, is what she said. No, Taylor, go bleep yourself. You know, I got to be kind here. I don't want Mrs. Taylor Swift, a.k.a. Travis Kelsey, to come beat me up. So let's talk about Jason Kelsey's ESPN talk show ratings. The show's called, they call it Late Night with Jason Kelsey on ESPN. It drew only 290,000 viewers. It's at 1 a.m. Eastern time, and it fell way short of expectations. So obviously, with only 290,000 viewers, I think, I have it here somewhere. Where did it go? I think the show it replaced a year ago had like 490,000. Where's it at? I have it here somewhere. Yes. So it had about 290,000 viewers its first show, which is terrible, terrible. My previous iteration of my company, I mean, my God, we blew those numbers out. This is a new venture here, so we're not at those numbers. I'd kill to have those numbers. But in the grand scheme of things, we're talking in an ESPN show here. It fell below the 436,000 viewer average for the typical ESPN broadcast. Now, despite the ratings, ESPN says they're pleased with their association with Kelsey, vaulting the broader aspects of the programming deal over immediate viewership numbers. They can say that. But you know they're miserable with those numbers. They have to be. But remember, ESPN stands for woke bigotry and racism towards Anglos and conservatives. To get a job there, you have to profess your white privilege, which is what obviously Mrs. Travis Kelsey has done and Jason Kelsey has done, as well as Kylie Kelsey. That's my speculative guess on there. I don't know, but that seems to be the case from everything we see and here regarding ESPN from insiders in the industry, as well as what we see with our own eyes and what the hosts come out with. So that said, their association, look, I think they peaked, the Kelsey brothers, I think they both peaked. I could be wrong, but I think this is their high. You know, maybe they get a bump when Travis retires. And, you know, Travis does not have much longer in this league. He hasn't been a great player this season. He's been good enough. So he peaked a year or two ago. So his days are numbered, and maybe they have a bump when he retires and does something. But usually when at the point that Travis Kelce is going to retire, I think they're on their downward trend. But I could be wrong. God bless America, the country of capitalism. And if I'm wrong, kudos to them. But the show's been criticized for its content and lack of humor, saying it is, quote, painfully unfunny, unquote, has no depth or entertainment value. ESPN says they're pleased with this. But then again, this is ESPN has been pleased with some shows that have not done well at all, that they put millions and millions into it. So let's move on to Kylie Kelce's podcast versus Joe Rogan. This is great because I saw an article. This is the first I saw of it. And I'm pretty on top of it in terms of podcasters who are the big stars out there and who aren't. I follow that. Then I saw this. Kylie Kelce fires back at Joe Rogan fans after taking podcast crown. And as you can see up here, Joe Rogan podcast. Who is this? That's what everybody was saying. You know, now her podcast is called Not Gonna Lie, and supposedly it briefly topped Rogan's podcast. But we don't know if that was a marketing effort and if it really did, because no numbers were given, no data was given to back it up. And the association is obviously because she's part of the Kelce family and Travis Kelce, aka Mrs. Taylor Swift, is part of that block now. So some are actually questioning, as I am, if it did surpass JRE, the Joe Rogan Experience, again, as no data was given. So, and it's also one of these things, it's 1 week. So what's that really mean? My take is, again, I think a lot of this has to do with their association with Taylor Swift. So now the whole nation knows who Travis Kelce is, and by extension, a lesser amount, but more people know who Jason Kelce and Kylie Kelce are. It's the coattail effect. God bless him. If I had it, boy, I'd use it too. So, what are we seeing from the Kelce family right now with these terrible ratings? Overexposure. Taylor Swift gave them a popularity boost. But as much as America loves to build somebody up, they're quick to tear them down. We're suffering content fatigue from them right now. It's a novelty to see athletes in non-sports roles, but it wears off rather quickly, especially if the content doesn't meet the hype or feels forced as the Jason Kelce show. It feels forced. You know, another analogy is like Tom Brady, great quarterback, terrible announcer, terrible. And he's the number one announcer. In fact, I don't see him doing a pass this year. One, he's a minority owner. There's this conflict of interest here in terms of him calling games and being an owner, a minority owner. So he's terrible, very terrible. He is no Tony Romo, that's for sure. So let's compare real quick before we move on, the social media comparison from Kylie Kelce to Joe Rogan. Because she wrote an article. Kylie Kelce fires back at Joe Rogan. Or actually, she didn't write an article. Eric Bloom wrote it. But I guess she didn't like the way the fans were like, yeah, who are you? In fact, the Joe Rogan Experience himself said it. Who is this? Joe Rogan, about 19 million followers on Instagram, about 12 million followers on X, about 16 million subscribers on YouTube. That's a beast. It's a beast. Kylie Kelce is about 2.3 million followers on Instagram, and on YouTube, about 230,000. She is no chopped liver. God bless you, woman. You are doing pretty damn well yourself, but you are no Joe Rogan. So you can clap back all you want, but if you can maintain it, God bless you, and good for girl power. I just don't see it happening. So critics suggest, some of the fans out there are saying that Kylie's success is more about her connections than her personal talent, labeling her as a hack, leveraging family fame. That's kind of harsh. I don't know if I'd go out and say that, but maybe she came off as unpopular by attacking Rogan's listeners. Let's see. Also, here's what happened. So people were like, who is Kylie Kelce? And she brought this up herself, and it's true. I haven't typed her name. I typed her name for the first time when I was researching for this podcast, and it was just an offshoot. But when you type somebody's name, you're going to get more of that person in your timeline. So JRE fans, excuse me, are actually helping her. And again, even the her own supporters acknowledge that, yeah, maybe she got a bump because of Travis Kelce's relationship with Taylor Swift. So while the Kelce family media ventures have captured attention, they also highlight a double-edged sword of celebrity by association. Nobody knows who she is to this day. I don't think it'll last. But then there's also the overexposure and reliance on external fame and questions about sustainability of their media presence that suggests that the public's patience is likely wearing, not wearing thin as much as like, eh, we've had enough, we're moving on. That's going to be their true test. And, you know, God bless them if they've done well with this attention, with being part of the Swift family. Even Mama-san, I believe, has gotten in on the action of being tied to the Swift. So enjoy your 15 minutes. You've earned it. Can't take that away from you. But I just had to put a reality check because those ratings for his show, what's that show called again? They call it Late Night with Jason Kelce. You have 290,000 fans, at least to start this week one. I could not find the ratings numbers for week two. But if it really drops, I'll provide a quick update with my new, I have a new segment that I will be debuting next week. And what is that called? Where I take the scorecard highlights. It's going to be quick takes. And we'll debut that next week. But if there's an update, I'll pop it in there. So, my friends, I hope you've enjoyed the show. I wanted to take a hard look at Mike Tomlin. I believe he needs to go elsewhere, and he can do better. I think he's maximized what he's done with the Steelers. Damien S. Butler, I don't know if he's a racist, a bigot, or an idiot. Either way, he's purposely, I believe, trying to stoke racial divide for personal gain. So I guess I would make him a bigot in my eyes, but I could be wrong. Heck, if he sees this, he's more than welcome to want to come on. If he wants to come on the show, we'll discuss it. I have a rich history in the NFL. I've been following these racial games since Jim Trotter. Man, the guy's been fired from every job, and it's because of his skin tone is what he wants you to believe. At least that's how I see it. And I was able to call it out. I mean, you saw that. You know, they fire coaches left and right, regardless of color, after one season. I think it's a dumb move by owners for 75% of the coaches. And specifically this year, Antonio Pierce, Gerard Mayo deserved to be fired. Rand Carthon, you know, the team sucked. And he had a big hand in the last two seasons. And we're not even seeing production or growth from these players. We're seeing mediocrity. So they, for some reason, let him go. You know, should they have given him one more year? I think so. You get one more year for the GM, maybe they can turn around. Maybe they're a quarterback away from piss poor to mediocrity. Who knows? But Gerard Mayo deserved to go. Antonio Pierce did not. And obviously, the final topic here we spoke about, Kelce's late night fumble. Let the ratings speak volumes. ESPN's a dying brand. They're desperate. I am forced to pay for ESPN Plus and Disney Plus because I subscribe to Hulu. I just got an email maybe a couple years ago. We're adding ESPN Plus and Disney Plus to your Hulu account, and you will be charged $5.99. And it's gone up. When I started with Hulu, it was like $70. Now it's like $100 a month. And just in a few years, it's gone up $30. The last time I was at Disney was just recently, only to update it so I could watch the mature stuff. Prior to that, it had been a few years. And why did I update it? I want to see the new Deadpool movie. I haven't seen that yet. So ESPN's a dying brand. I believe the Kelce's are the result of them being a dying brand kind of hurt his show. But his show is not funny from what the critics are saying and what the fans are saying. Kylie Kelce, enjoy your 15 minutes as well. God bless everybody who's done well for themselves, because I'm not knocking him. It's a great topic to talk about. Do not forget, my friends, you can find this podcast, Points on the Board, as well as my conservative political podcast, Fired Up. A conservative Latino's point of view is there, as well as my culture podcast, because as Andrew Breitbart said, politics is downstream of culture, meaning what happens in America eventually affects politics, and I talk about that. You can find that as well as this one, Points on the Board. So you can find Fired Up, Red, White, and Rude. One is politics, the other is culture, and the other, obviously, Points on the Board is sports at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Pandora, Spotify, under the handle Grumblings Media. Thank you for tuning in. Do not forget to like and share this episode. I am William Del Pilar, and until next week, this is Points on the Board, and I bid you adieu.